This is a special one today if you are superstitious at all, because it's episode number 13. Coach, that's a big number. Episode 13 of Football 52 with UNC head football coach Ed Lamb. I am Brady Hull. Here we go. Spring ball. We're through it already, Coach.
Big transition to go straight from spring practice where we've got 20 hours a week with the guys. And, of course, they're in the facility, in and out all day long. So it's like it feels like in season. And then we have that spring game on a Saturday. And then the next Monday, it's like it's just like dropping off of a ledge. You know, the guys are into finals. They go into a discretionary period 1 month long where they – they can be here at UNC. They can be in Greeley, but most of them are going to go home. They're going to take those family vacations. They're going to try and get in their reunions and spend some time at home. So, yeah, we miss them already.
What's that? What is that like for you guys, for you as coaches, you know, because you have that control with everybody, you know, they're going to be there at workouts, practice, film sessions, like clockwork. And if they're not there on time, there's repercussions. But now it's, we joked about it a couple of weeks ago, you kind of just want to put everybody in a dome. This is their kind of free roaming period.
It's a much needed break for everybody.
Yeah.
I think, you know, when I saw a lot of the high school kids start to go to year round football, I thought it might be detrimental to some of their development. And I see that when I travel through states like Texas, you know, who has a full contact spring ball, very few multi-sport players, especially amongst the recruitable athletes. And then you got a state like Colorado, where it's still very much for the top athletes in the school, they're still very much like three-sport athletes. They're not working on football year-round. I really think that there's something special that takes place when you step away from the game for a period of time. I'll give you an example just from a coaching standpoint. Every year, we're super critical. Every practice, every game. We literally build video cut-ups, hours long of each practice of each position. And then we go and we criticize the players and we criticize ourselves and we criticize each other. Okay, what can we do different? But at the end of the season, we go through the season cut-ups. And it's totally enlightening because we're like, how did we miss that? Mm. Well, we were biased. We were right in the middle of things, and it was really hard to see because we were so in the thick of things. And so maybe we were, too loyal or to a player, and maybe we didn't see another player who was kind of shining and knocking on the door. And we're not perfect. We don't expect to be, but it's really enlightening just sometimes the fact that seasonal change and that break can bring such a different perspective.
Take that step back and really kind of analyze what's been going on the last several weeks. I suppose that has to be extremely beneficial for everybody, but coaches especially.
Coaches, well, I'm giving it from my perspective, but I really feel like the players do as well. I feel like they're coming in and getting criticized every day, and they're hard on themselves, right? Every day you come out there as an athlete, a guy puts his very best out there, and then, you know, next day, boom, you know, he's getting chopped down. And we really try to balance, it's part of our routine as coaches, we try to balance the positive and the negative and make sure that we're being really positive with guys and seeing what they're doing well and at least recognizing the effort. But, yeah, I think players are the same. I think when they step away and start and, you know, maybe get a week or two with no football and just kind of staying in shape, then they start going back and maybe watching some of the spring cut-ups and, man, I'm going to do this better this fall. I'm going to do that better this fall. You know, and that's one of the things I was going to talk to you about with David Afari a little bit later. And I think he already is kind of, just as a veteran guy, he is starting to see maybe, okay, what has my career looked like and what do I want it to look like?
Well, and then that, I want to get into that too, because we'll talk about David. I know we want to get specifics on maybe some goals set. How you know, is that a common thing amongst the players at the end of spring ball? Okay, next after this, then we're not that far away from the season. I mean, we've got a few months, but it goes by pretty quick. We've been doing this podcast for 13 weeks. That's flown by. So I want to talk about that as far as personal goals, but just going back, recapping spring. And it sounds like, and again, I've heard from a lot of people that have followed this program, there's a little bit of a buzz, Coach. I mean, there's people excited. They're really interested to see what happens with that quarterback battle. Some key players on the defensive side. We've talked about the interiors. We've talked about the offensive line. We've talked about the defensive line. So I think there's a lot of excitement surrounding them. But if I could give you, you know, maybe you don't have to condense it to just one thing, but maybe a couple of things that really you walk away from spring ball that stood out the most where you go, okay, I really loved what we saw here.
I've been saying it since like before we went into spring ball. I thought that the strength of our team could be the offensive and defensive lines. And I think we've increased the talent and the readiness at every position, and that's credit to the guys and how they've bought in and worked hard. There are so many different facets to improving a player. You know, we talk about culturally, academically, and maturity. You talk about in the weight room, their fitness, their strength, et cetera. But I think that the way that I think initially the defensive line really bought in and had some very quality players and a lot of competition from within, and then the offensive line being so young last year and taking a lot of heat, like our team is very cognizant that, you know, overall it was probably the offense that struggled a little more. It was probably the offensive line that struggled the most within that group. And they were very young. And we didn't go out and recruit a bunch of transfers. We said from the beginning, look, you guys are young. You're going to get better every game. You're going to get better every year. We believe in you. You're our guys. And to see that come to fruition where now we're really running the ball well against what I consider a very good FCS defensive line. I feel like there's a lot to be excited about at the line of scrimmage this coming year.
Last week, we talked about that, the scrimmage last weekend or 2 weekends ago, and that we talked about the offensive line a lot, and you were really encouraged by their production and what they were doing, even though we had one guy, one key player. We all thought on the outside, at least, enter the transfer portal, and we talked about how, well, maybe this line looks a little bit stronger. They look more like a unified group. Did that carry over into the spring game over the weekend, or did you see the defensive line kind of bounce back?
It did. I thought the toughness was there, the unity was there, and you know we talked about it before. They weren't unified because of Austin leaving.
Sure.
It was I think unified because of somebody good leaving. Right? It wasn't.
It was a personal reaction.
It was
more
just
like everybody has to step up.
Whoa, we lost a good player, so who's stepping up? It needs to be multiple guys and all of the guys. And I really think that they rallied around that. And you know, we have a saying: happy for the other guy's success. And so if Austin or anybody feels like they have a different opportunity that's better for them, okay, well, happy for your success. But we're here still building this thing together. And so I think that was the dynamic. The spring game was a complete challenge from a weather standpoint.
It was
raining just consistently. Sometimes when the rain comes and goes or the wind comes and goes, you can kind of find spots to keep the defense honest. But, you know, for the first hour of that spring game, the defense was just jammed in the box, and every pass that we tried to throw to keep them honest was sailing or just dirted. It, like, just to get a grip on the ball was difficult. But not only that, the balls became really heavy really quickly, and it's just really a challenge on the offense when they become one dimensional like that. But when the rain cleared up a bit, the ball started to dry out, and the players started to dry out a little bit. Well, the offense really came on strong. We were basically doing a point per a victorious series is the simplified way to talk about the way we were keeping score. The defense had jumped out to a 10-1 lead, and I think the final was 13-6.
Got it 100%
yeah.
Right.
So the offense did come back, and that was not a thing of okay, let's pull the good players on defense. It was we had a consistent rotation going on offense and defense throughout the whole scrimmage.
Now, you see in some spring games, not all of the key starters will actually play in those games. We've seen it with UNC in the past too. Mm-hmm. So, was that one of those things where okay, I want to get a look at some of the guys? Some guys I don't need to get a look at here. Maybe guys nursing a little bit of a banged up a little bit. Is that did you purposely rest a few players on the spring game?
We didn't.
You just went at it.
We did. I think the one thing that we did was we had to debate and make a decision on the contact level for the quarterbacks, and that was another huge challenge for the offense to get going when we needed to run the ball and the defense knew it. you know, the quarterback keeping it or running it in designed run fashion, that adds a different element to the defense. And those quarterbacks were in red jerseys. And so the tackle is always just a two-hand touch, and we blow the whistle at that point. So, but we really felt like, okay, this is a bad way to say it, but it's just reality. We feel like we need to put the appropriate level of contact risk out there in spring practice. And so we did more tackling than I've ever done, more full contact. We still have a young developmental team. I feel like that if anybody, you know, would have gotten an injury that we could have traced back to contact, that it would have been something we regret. But I think the overall level of proficiency on the whole team rose in a way that justified it, the contact, and we didn't lose anybody to any type of serious injury. As you know, there's always bumps, bruises, strains, sprains, but we didn't have any for the most contact that I've ever been around for a spring practice. We had zero surgical type injuries.
Is that priority? That's got to be priority number one, right? Let's get through spring. I mean, it's probably that way all season, but you darn sure don't want to have somebody in a spring game or a practice come up with an injury that's going to put them out 6+ months.
It's a really difficult question. We do the research. You know, I've got two sports scientists from the athletic training side. Bree is our she's the one that looks at it from that side, from the health standpoint. And then you know, Tyler's our strength coach, and he's got a sports science background as well. And so we really look a lot at, okay, if when we're trying to prevent injuries, should we be tackling and contacting and going full to the ground more often? Because there's also, I think, as a football player, as a developmental football player, you learn how to do those things to the ground in a way that keeps you safer than when you're unsure. You know, you can take a really highly trained athlete in a different sport, say a basketball player or baseball player, throw them on a football field. They're the ones most likely to get hurt. They're not going to know when to contact and when to release and how to coordinate all of that contact to the ground.
Well, and you know, say that when you're worried about an injury, maybe you're favoring something, you're thinking about that more, and your body's tensed up in a different way where maybe you end up getting hurt a little bit more than you would have if you were just going hard and not thinking about it as much.
Yeah, and we constantly have – that's a really good point, because we constantly – as soon as somebody gets a sprain, a strain, something going on, they have typically a different color jersey on. And that jersey means to everybody else, hey, this guy's out there doing everything he can, but stay away from him. And so, you know, if the drill is super competitive, well, obviously those guys can't be in there at that point. But we do we're taking care of the guys who need a little bit of extra concern on any given day.
Coach, one of the – and I'll ask you just a brief question about the quarterback battle, yeah. Of course. Yeah. It's going to be a big one on everybody's mind. But one of the plays that a lot of people are talking about was actually looking at Caden Box and what he was able to do with Braden Monroe and connecting on a deep ball on such a lousy day. What was it, a 50-yard pass?
Mm-hmm.
Talk to us about that play first off, and then I'll ask you about the quarterback competition, what you can give us at least.
Sure. Well, you know, that was what we call an alert. You know, there's typically when there's deep passes like that, there's a little more of a concept occurring somewhere else. And then the alert is kind of the over the top. And sometimes we can tag it if we're really seeing something like, hey, we think we can win on the outside edge. But this was an alert situation. And so by that, I mean that you kind of, as a quarterback, okay, you've got the concept in your mind. You're pre-playing the snap in your mind. And you take a look at the defense. Well, if there's a lot of guys kind of sucked down in mm-hmm. the box, then that typically means you've got pretty much a one-on-one battle on the outside. And so that's the first kind of alert that a quarterback would go through. And Caden did a good job of kind of alerting that. Okay, I've got Braden, who's the fastest receiver on our team, and a physical and can go up and get the ball. So, okay, that's the first alert. Let me take a peek just after the snap and see if he's actually out there winning, and then we can let that thing fly. And so really nice job by Caden. He's got a really strong arm. He's very coachable. He's improved a lot through the spring. He delayed by his own choice. He delayed his initial enrollment. So he will be a true freshman in the fall. This is a bonus spring practice for him. A really mature decision that pays off for a lot of guys. KJ Smedley is one that did that on defense. He actually early enrolled, but same thing. He got a spring practice as a bonus under his belt without costing him any eligibility. And I think both of those guys are going to play huge roles in the future for UNC.
That's got to be so exciting for you, because I've heard you mention his name, Box's name especially, just a little, you know, once in a while, a little bit more. And then you start ironing out the depth chart a little bit, and then it becomes a little bit more clear. You have the spring game. Okay, he's maybe the third guy right there.
Yeah.
But you got him for a while. That's, you know, like you said, bonus spring ball. And then for him to connect in a bonus type game, that's got to get you pretty excited.
Really, yeah, really exciting. I don't never want to give too much information about the transfers and kind of get into their business, especially in a format like this where who knows who's listening,
sure.
Right? But, you know, I think Shay Kuykendall, it's kind of really clear his situation as far as, you know, he was the third quarterback last year, got some playing time because the other guys got hurt. I've always said did a really admirable job of rallying the team, preparing the team. He's tough as nails mentally and physically. And then, you know, he decided that this just wasn't the right spot for him. And it was kind of a painful decision for him because he's close to the teammates. He enjoyed being a part of the program, but felt like he just, you know, needed a better opportunity to maybe climb up the depth chart. So he leaves. What's going through Caden Box's mind at that point, who's number four, but sees an opportunity? Wait, there's a big difference between three and four. Mm-hmm. You know, four doesn't usually travel. Four almost never gets in the game. Three is a different story. And, would have liked to have some insight. I mean, I saw it on the field in terms of the product that he put out there, but I would have liked to have had some insight into what he was thinking at that point when Shay decided to move on.
Yeah, well, I'm sure, you know, we talked about this. I mean, the transfer portal is interesting. It's negative and positive, but for some of these guys on, you know, lower down the depth chart, they got to look at that as an opportunity. And it sounds like, you know, at least with that play, Caden Box, you know, makes his presence felt a bit. We know the battle, though. Hank Gibbs, Peter Castelli, talk to us about that. And again, I guess the secondary question to that, how much can you really evaluate in a spring game like this? I suppose you have to take the whole body of work through spring ball when you're making your decisions and thinking about who's going to ultimately be that quarterback. Because even in the regular season, if you get a game where the weather's lousy, we always say it, the cliche, you know, throw everything out. It's a crappy game. If a quarterback makes a couple of throws, you got to feel like you're ahead. So I would imagine when you're evaluating this quarterback competition, the spring ball, because of the weather, is a very small percentage of that?
Yes, no doubt about it. And the red jersey being on the players. I mean, the for both Peter and Hank, and a bit for Caden, the ability to use their legs to get out of trouble and potentially even on designed quarterback runs is such a big part of their arsenal. Particularly in comparison with last year with Sermon, there's no question. You know, Jacob was a pocket passer, and I've always said it, elite arm, NFL arm. He just was invited this last week to the Browns.
I did see that,
mini
sure.
camp. So really excited for him to just get a chance to go and show that. And you know, perhaps he can get in a situation where you know, he continues to develop, and somebody recognizes that arm talent that I've been saying from the start. Since I first saw him throw. But those two guys, Peter and Hank, they bring a lot of dynamic ability with their ability to run it. And they're two very different types of runners. I mean, Hank is really downhill, 6'6", 245, one of the strongest players that are on our team coming at you. I mean, that is difficult on a defense in one way. And then Peter's got that that quickness and top-end speed that's really difficult.
Well, just thinking about the spring and, you know, everything that's gone through the last couple of weeks, you know, we're getting to know, as the audience, getting to know these guys more. And I know we're going to get into specific players a lot more, too. At the end of spring ball, is it a thing for guys to create goals now and say, OK, at the end of spring ball, we got through it. Now we're looking at the next time we're all getting together. We're starting to put stuff really together for that first regular season football game. Our guys, how do you do that? Are we like, hey, we want to work with you, sit down, and we're going to discuss your upcoming season goals? Or is that voluntary? Do they come to you with that? Or do you put that on them? How does that work?
So, yeah, really good question. This may be a little bit of a wordy answer, so just cut me off. Throw me a sign here. But because there are a lot of different ways, and I want coaches to be authentic first, like in their approach. And so I've been around programs where at the end of spring and at the end of fall, you put a sign-up sheet. You know, the head coach expects you to put a sign-up sheet, and every 10 or 15 minutes, there's a slot. And as soon as as soon as the spring or fall ball is over, you meet with every player and you tell them, okay, this is where you're at. This is your goals. Do you have any feedback for me? Here's some feedback for you. It's kind of an exit interview is what we call it, or end of spring or end of fall interview. So I don't really force guys to do it that way because I know a lot of guys are just really in tune with their players. I'll give an example. DJ Williams, our corners coach, you can ask him at any moment, at any time about his players' lifestyle, habits, likes, dislikes, their propensity, likelihood of them jumping in the transfer portal. He's just super in tune to those guys, and I think coaches them a lot with kind of a brotherly or maybe more appropriately like an uncle type relationship. And there's a high level of trust both ways. So I'm not going to make DJ go through that exercise. He certainly has some exit interviews because I think it's, he believes it's appropriate with a certain guy or two. Other guys on our staff, they're maybe a little bit more, rigid or businesslike in their approach. And it's important that they have let's have a closed door meeting, just me and you, because we don't always talk one-on-one. And so other guys are doing that. But yeah, this is the time of year where coaches are setting goals, expectations for players, and then players are mirroring that back to us or coming up with their own goals and expectations.
Well, I know specifically David Afari. That's one we want to talk about. And when you bring a guy up, when you and I are talking back and forth and talking about the show, and this is a guy you want to talk about, then my mind automatically goes to, this is going to, obviously, yeah. David Afari, he's going to be even more so next year, just a key piece to what you're doing when it comes to the offensive side of the football.
David asked if he could come and meet with me, and and I was, kind of both excited and nervous at the same time, because I'll give you some extra dynamics here. The first thing is David's had a good spring ball, but not a great spring ball. He has NFL aspirations, and he didn't necessarily run like an NFL back in spring. But he's also, to his credit, he's a veteran. He's been our leading rusher in games and has a lot of ability. Certainly should have an expectation of being and striving to be an NFL player. Caden Meese was kind of the surprise of spring.
You brought him
at the
up a
running
couple
back
weeks ago.
Position.
Yeah.
He ran the hardest in spring. He ran the most motivated. Now, a big part of Caden's motivation is he was a walk-on, and he just earned a scholarship. So huge moment for him. What a great meeting and the progress that Caden Meese has made. Super excited for him. You need a lot more than one good running back to win a championship. You cannot do it with two good running backs. So I think all running backs realize that, and yet I was a little bit concerned. Okay, well, how's David seeing this? Because he certainly didn't have a bad spring, right? But he's also sometimes a veteran will go into spring, especially at the running back position. Okay, I'm going to get my reads. I'm going to give it my all here. I'm going to give 100%. But really, like, do you strain to the point where, you can get injured? Running back is a vulnerable position. Are you straining to break every tackle, twisting out of things to the point where maybe you put yourself in a bad position? And I thought David's motivation was more to come out and do his job for the team, but not quite the same level of motivation that he would have in a game. And maybe that's somewhat natural, especially at the running back position. But I also have this offseason kind of out away from football relationship with David. And it's kind of a cool thing. Like if you've seen David, right? Like, I think this is a thing with people around Greeley, they don't assume that David's from here, right? He looks different. He dresses different. He acts different. He talks different. And that's one of the awesome parts about college football is you're bringing together all this diversity, bringing it to a somewhat rural community like Greeley in this case. And but David found – he came over and rode horses one day with me. And the next day, I got a, a selfie from him in front of the mirror with a full cowboy outfit on. Check my fit, coach.
Oh, I like that.
And now he's every week he's texting, "Hey, coach, can I come over? Can I come over and ride this weekend?" So we ride together, and he really likes one of my horses, Blackjack, who's a kind of a long, smooth runner, and you know, he's always over trying to hop on Blackjack and improve his riding skills, and he's really into that part of the horsemanship is just getting better at his skills.
Had he ever ridden horses before?
No.
So this was the first time he comes out to your place.
Okay. Yeah, first time. And so I've got this relationship too, right? Which kind of adds an interesting dynamic of, okay, what does David want to meet about, right? Because we talk all the time. But we do keep it a lot about horses and life and girlfriends and family and stuff when we're just, you know, on the horses doing a trail ride or something like that. So he comes into the office and he's got goals. He wants to talk about goals. Mm. He wants to be a 2,000 yards all-purpose on the season. Now, he's in the battle for our starting kick returner, starting punt returner, starting running back, and we've been using him at some slot receiver F position, which also does some becomes a two-back set for us at times and can become kind of an option guy or bubble screen type of guy, right? So there's just a ton of roles that he's fulfilling right now. And that might have been, too, why he was in his head about assignments more than just going out and competing every day in spring. He had a lot to learn, really a lot to pick up, and we're trying to kind of build things and formulate some things around his abilities and find out what he can do best. But he comes to me with these goals, and immediately I got a huge smile because I was thinking maybe he wants to transfer.
Yeah, that was my next question. Yeah,
yeah, maybe Caden Meese's success is somehow, you know, I was prepared to explain to him, look, I coached Tyler Algier at BYU, who's having a ton of success in the NFL. He was a linebacker and then moved to running back, and we needed a lot more than Tyler Algier to be a great rushing football team. Yeah. And I was going to pull up these stats and, you know, just show them, like, you don't have one running back.
So you were prepared.
I was prepared for that.
Yeah.
And he came in and talked about goals, the 2,000 yards all purpose. And so I immediately got this smile for a few reasons. Number one, you know, he's bought in, and I thought he was. It would have been a surprise to me if he transferred, but I was still worried. I didn't want him to transfer. So I got a smile about that. But also I could see the maturity of a veteran player. We don't have a ton of seniors. We don't have a ton of veteran players. We're kind of building this thing from the high school level up. And so when you're losing upperclassmen and replacing them with high school guys, you've got a team full of underclassmen. And someday we're going to get to that point where we've got the 30 seniors like South Dakota State did last year. We're going to retain and develop and be strong in that way. But we're not there yet. So a lot of the young guys that are coming into their meetings, their goals are more like, I want to get on the bus. I want to make the travel squad. I want to earn a full scholarship. I want to be in the starting lineup. It brought a smile to my face to hear David talk about a production goal that was, you know, for the team and for himself and looking ahead to next season about what he could possibly accomplish.
I love setting goals. You know, I love when players say, hey, this is my goal. I want to look at that, because that's a little side thing you can pay attention to when you're watching the football games. Is, all right, how close is he getting to that? But I love that you bring that up too, that personal story with him, connecting with him in such a way. And I love you kind of opening yourself up a little bit, saying, I would have been really shocked. And that would have been a big surprise if he would have walked into my office and said, I want to transfer. And that's the tough part about that, because you're building a relationship with this guy, and it seems like you guys have a tight relationship. So even to have that thought in the back of your head, that had to be a stress. So when did he reach out? He reaches out and says, I want to meet with you. How many days go by? Are you like, no, let's meet now. Let's figure this out.
Yeah, I think by my recollection, I guess I could check my phone, but by my recollection, I think he had texted me the night before, said, hey, can we meet tomorrow? You know, absolutely. There's a time I finish with the lift, and let's get going.
So get that out of the way. Okay.
Get that out of the way. And then because we have the relationship, I think, of trust built up, like he knows that I care about him as a person. You know, all of our players, I want them to know that. I talk about it. I preach about it. Like, your value as a person is way bigger. It transcends your value as a football player. But so much of my transactional relationship with these guys is just about them as a football player, right? And I can't escape that, really, unless there's a little bit of a two-way street on just getting to know each other. Door's always open. Guys can come in, sit on the couch, and talk to me about anything in life. You know, we just don't all have time for that, I guess. But in David's case, we've got that. So I was able to you know, be excited about him coming, giving me some goals. But then as the coach in me that knew I had his trust level, I said, okay, hey, we need to reset these because here's the deal. We can have these goals as a whole program to get you to 2,000 all-purpose yards, but here's your part in that. Let's talk about yards per carry. Because when we talk about 2,000 all-purpose yards, part of that goal is you've got some goals that you hope the coaches are giving you opportunities. You're not going to get 2,000 yards of all-purpose yardage with 40 touches on the season, most likely, right?
Yeah.
We've got your touches have to maximize. So let's talk about yards per carry, because if you're leading the conference in yards per carry and you're not leading the team in rushes or you're not leading the conference in rushes, you've got a valid reason to be in my office saying, hey, coach, what's going on? I'm leading the conference in yards per carry. We need to get me the ball more, don't we? That would make a lot of sense. So I was able to shape him back to, okay, let's look at, in terms of goal setting, let's look at what you can control. And then let's look at the subjective part of it. The subjective part that you can't control is how many touches you're getting, right? But you can certainly influence that. And by maximizing your yards per carry and yards per return, things like that, that are going to help you get to that goal.
I think that's an interesting dynamic of this too. The part of setting goals is you're accountable to each other, because now you got this running back who's looking at you saying, hey, I want these numbers. And you say, well, to achieve those numbers, you got to be on the field. You have to have the attempts. You have to have those options. So you kind of have to both have that understanding that, okay, game one rolls around. Maybe you get a ton of carries right off the bat and something's just not clicking and we're going to keep going elsewhere. Maybe we get into more of a pass game. We don't want to have a blow up at halftime. We don't want to have a blow up at the end of the game saying, hey, what's going on here? So I think and again, this is why I think I have so much respect for coaches. That is a fine line you have to walk, because you want to support those goals, but you also have to be real about those goals too.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, in terms of production goals, all of our players' production goals are at odds with one another. There aren't enough carries in a game to get all of our running backs their production goals.
Yeah, you're doing
goals.
The math, and you're like, wait a second, this isn't going to work out that way.
Never going to work, right? And so it's really important that when we talk about tools, we're talking about leverage, and that's what I wanted to give him is, okay, well, let's reshape these a little bit. It's certainly, you know, have that in your book of goals, the 2,000 yards all-purpose. What a tremendous accomplishment that would be, but what are your levers to make that happen? Here's a lever you can pull, yards per carry.
Oh, I love that. I love hearing that too. What is the relationship like? You know, when you hear about position battles, you got, and again, quarterback's a little different, but running back, you can have a position battle and still the guy, the number two guy, the number three guy is still going to get production. But for David Afari, for Caden Meese, you know, we talked about Caden Meese a couple times and said, hey, he's coming on strong. Do they have a good relationship? Is it that iron sharpening iron, both mentally and physically, between those two?
I really think it is. I think the guys are loyal to each other, first and foremost. I think we all, you know, that have played sports can remember that, particularly the guys that are, you know, really hard workers. The idea that you're kind of rooting for the other guy's unsuccess is just, it's just not realistic. Last year, the top two guys coming out of most games were Darius Stewart, we call him Red, and David Afari, and those guys always supported each other. I mean, you can just see it in small signals as guys are coming on or off the field, and, you know, you're giving each other touching each other up, a pat on the back as you go by. It's not like, you know, hang your head as you're coming out of the game because the other guy's coming in. There's just no way at this level of competitive football that a running back can sit out there and carry the ball for all 40 rushes, you know, and expect to last throughout the season or give his best on any given play.
Well, and also too, I mean, if let's say David Afari has a couple of decent runs, he comes out for a moment, Caden Meese goes in, has a couple of decent runs. If you're Afari, you got to go, well, that we're going to keep running the ball. So that's just going to give me more opportunities because we're both finding it right now. Exactly. He's wearing the defense out in a different way. I'm wearing the defense out in a different way. And that's why we always say, you know, in football, the 1-2 punch, when we see two running backs or three or four or whatever, they all provide something different that messes with the defense a bit.
Absolutely. You know, Mike Smith is not with us anymore as running back coach. But one of the things that he would say often, and I remember it well because I was coaching when he was a running back at Utah State. All three of those running backs at Utah State went to the NFL and had good careers. Robert Turbin was probably, the leading rusher guy between them. Mm. Mike Smith went as well. And there's a lot of room when you just said the key words, when the other running back is in there and he's being successful, that's softening the defense. And the yards per carry tend to go up over the course of a football game, not down. And so if the other guy can be in there softening it up, that's just more opportunity for the fresh guy that comes in next.
When you go into a game, is there a number in your head as far as running backs where you go, okay, we need to have this many carries? Or is it, let's see how the game goes? I mean, yeah, we know we want to run the ball. Or do you go into that and say, this is kind of a mini goal. We have to hit this many carries today.
Super, super interesting question that makes me reflect on something. You know, when I became a first-time head coach at Southern Utah, I really didn't have a ton of offensive experience. All of my offensive experience was seeing it from the defensive side. And then I think when anybody becomes a head coach, okay, now you get more involved in all three phases of the game from a managerial standpoint. You're paying attention to more things. And even through all that time and even the success we had at Southern Utah, I had never had a number in my mind about the number of quality running backs that you should have to get through a season healthy. It just never occurred to me to put a number on it. And then when I got to BYU as an assistant, Elisa Tuiaki, who's one of my best friends in life, much less one of the best football coaches I know, we were working together and we'd had a couple of injuries over at the running back position. We had some guys in there that were kind of struggling. And of course we were coaching defense and it was impacting the defense because we couldn't move the football on offense. Right. And it was a really difficult year for all of us. And Elisa was the running backs coach at Utah State when they had these three great running backs. And he said, you need five every year. You need five capable winning running backs to get through a whole season. And so I started paying attention to that over the years at BYU and seeing, you know, if there were enough roles for five guys. And certainly, you know, the role number five is not equal to role number one, but you need about five guys. And I'm excited about that here. I think we have a really deep room of running backs.
Well, you know, my next question is, can you give us those five guys, coach?
Yeah. You start with the returning guys, right? So David Afari and Darius Stewart and Caden Meese and Jaquez Robertson, they carried the ball the most last year. Jordan Hornbeek came in some moments last year and ran the ball hard. He had some great runs at Montana in a difficult situation. So, you know, those guys right now are probably carrying most of the load. Lorenz Loveless was a walk-on for us this offseason that is going to make the team. Really excited about him. He ran really hard all spring long. I thought coming out of the first scrimmage, he maybe ran the best, or at least was kind of most improved, most exciting, best addition, something like that. There's an award that I could probably give him for the spring, and he would be well deserving of it.
I always am fascinated by, okay, guy, you know, 1 through 3 running backs or any position, 1 through 3, it's, you kind of know, you just know those guys, and maybe 1, 2, and 3 are pretty close, but 1's edging it out. I'm just fascinated by looking at 4 through 7, 4 through 8, you know, the ability that you guys have to sit down. And like you said, to start the podcast today was, does a guy get lost once in a while? And obviously that can happen. But I think that's got to be the difficult part. You know the guys that are shining and you know the guys that are stepping up and maybe you have a decision to make there. But that 4 through 7 has got to be one of the more, puzzling parts of putting together a team.
Well, absolutely. And, as I'm sitting here, I got to admit, when you bring up a question about depth chart, immediately
it's my
favorite
thing.
I get nervous about it. the main reason is it's really easy to leave somebody out, and
sure.
I probably would be just as likely to leave out like the top guy as the bottom, because I'm just thinking through this live. I don't have any paper in front of me.
No, you never do. You never do.
There are 120 players on a football roster, and however many running backs or defensive linemen or somebody there are, and if there are parents out there or these young guys are listening to this, like, oh, coach forgot about me. Well, there's no like, if you brought up a name of any guy on the 120 man roster, I can talk for a long time about their personality, their talent, their abilities, their goals. Like, it's just the idea that I would inadvertently leave somebody out is
sure.
It totally stresses me out. This goes from like a casual conversation where we're just talking ball to like, ah, oh, dang it.
I Brady, always see you did your it, eyes you light it, but, up when I ask, hey, what's the depth chart at this position? You're like, stop it. Why are we going there?
And it changes every day.
Yeah.
It's another stressful thing. Like,
100%.
Okay, I'm putting this out there on record and it's probably going to change today, but interesting.
I always think it's, you go to practices or whatever early and you just are handed a roster. And I am the guy, all the beat writers and stuff, they know the rosters, their beat writers are out there every single day. And I'm the guy that's like, I need a cheat sheet. I want the depth chart. Mm-hmm. That's what I want. And you never really get those until, heading into week one, you start getting that kind of thing. So I know I'm trying to get ahead of the game a little bit. I'm trying to cheat, coach.
I worked for Jim Harbaugh for a few years down at USD when we were down there at San Diego. And even now, I think if you kind of you can pull it up on YouTube and stuff like that, but he always gets really kind of offended on the media questions about the depth chart. He kind of this little pause. And,
yeah.
Oh, the old depth chart. Mm-hmm. Okay. And he really – I think he's put out some fake depth charts and things like that and, whatever it is, cartoon characters or something.
Yes, that's right. And that's one of my favorite things, too.
He can't stand the depth chart, and I know why, and I feel the same thing, and yet – we're not at Michigan here. If somebody's paying attention to our program and wants to know better players, it's my job to get out the old depth chart and
I'm going to start shooting you random texts now. Hey, I was thinking about the tight end position today. Any depth chart updates there? The
text I can do. It's this live stuff.
Well, and feel free anytime. Just no comment or just flip me the bird. I know you wouldn't
just
do
run
that.
From it.
And that
run
means
from the question.
Quickly change the subject, Brady. I'll say, bird just hit the window. Anyway, how is the rest of your day look? Coach, that kind of, we talked a lot about the spring weeks, and I know, it's a new chapter now, and I want to, as we wrap up today, I want to ask, like, for our listeners that are just catching up or whatever, what's next? What do the next couple of months look like? So we'll get into that in a moment. But talk to us about scholarship increases. I'm really, and I'm just learning more and more about how things are done with UNC, because obviously with your scholarships, they're different than how things are done at CSU, how things are done at CU.
Yeah. Well, the biggest difference between the FBS and FCS level is at the FCS level, we can use partial scholarships. So all three of the Division I teams in this state, they have 85 scholarship players on the team, or that's the max number of scholarship players you can have is 85. Well, CSU and CU, they've got 85 scholarships for 85 guys. We have 63 scholarships for 85 guys. Theoretically, I could full scholarship 63 guys and run the program that way, and I know a lot of FCS coaches who do that. And at a different program, I might feel like that would be the appropriate way to do it. Here, we're not winning a lot of recruiting battles. We purposely don't get in a lot of recruiting battles because we don't win a lot of recruiting battles from like schools. I mean, obviously, we would expect to compete and win for recruits if a guy's being recruited at a Division II level, if we feel like that player wants a Division I experience, right? And so that's most of the recruiting that we do when we talk about recruiting against schools, unless their offers are FCS offers from states and states away, we really don't have a lot of advantages in terms of recruiting. So what we're looking for is to work harder in the identification phase to find guys that are flying under the radar and to give them their best opportunity. And we can usually win that with a partial scholarship. Our typical offer for a freshman is everything but housing. And then when you come here and you kick butt, you earn the full scholarship. Anyone who's in the starting lineup who can be considered kind of a bona fide, consistent starter and is producing like that, they would go to full scholarship. So twice a year, it's my favorite time of year because I get to be Santa Claus. And
cool.
So much of what we do is criticism. But, you know, at the end of spring and at the end of fall, you know, typically whether it's, you know, guys that have left or other guys that just aren't making it, you know, or we just had some equivalency that was left over, some equivalency dollars or scholarship dollars. Now we go through the roster and it starts with the position coaches. And I say, hey, guys, before we go out and make recruiting pitches, who on our team is underfunded? Who deserves more? And then we just start talking about all the guys. And so we came up with a list of 9 guys that deserved it. And I usually don't try to get too much into the business because of specifics on that, because nobody, it's really nobody's business on the team who's on full, who's on partial, how much partial. And so I don't like to give names. Caden Meese is an exception because he's the one that went from zero. And he came here. We didn't recruit him here. He was here when I got here. But he went from zero as a true walk-on to a full scholarship. And wow. I think he, you know, I don't think anybody – you know, was unaware that he was a walk-on. So big moment for him. Mm-hmm. But we had 9 guys that came in, and I'm able to say, you know, the script goes something like, hey, we all see what you're doing. Your position coach trusts you, expects big things. Your coordinator trusts you, expects big things. Here's how I feel about you as a student athlete, leader on this team, and we want to make sure that we give you a tangible award to recognize what we see in you. And it's, you know, sometimes we get tears, or the guys have to sign a paper, their hand is shaking until they take a picture of it, call mom and dad. It's just, those are great moments to see how much guys care about those times.
And you said that's got to be one of the best parts about this, right?
It is. The offer to the recruit or the award, the increase of a scholarship, it tells you a lot about some guys, and at this level, we need guys who are really excited about it. And so it doesn't happen very often because we, you know, I told you our recruiting philosophy and what we're looking for, but if we make an offer and it seems like it's like, hey, yeah, coach, you know what? Thank you. I'm going to keep my options open for a while. Then I'm like, you know, I come right back with, hey, let me make sure I'm hearing this right. If you're keeping your options open, we need to keep ours open as well, correct? We need to make this offer. This one scholarship we have, we need to make this offer to multiple people, right? And then the conversation kind of moves forward at that point.
Yeah, and that's got to be the fascinating part too, is just figuring out with, like you said, 63 scholarships for 83 guys, right? How do you even begin that process? Are all the names up on a board somewhere, and there's a percentage and all this? Yeah. Like how? My brain can't compute with that kind of stuff. That's got to be – it's got to be kind of fun, you know, but challenging at the same time.
Rachel Walton is the bookkeeper. She's our senior women's administrator, associate athletic director, and she does – I used to keep my own records, spreadsheets, and at Southern Utah it's a little more difficult because you have so many missionaries, and so there's this constant rotating of guys who you've signed, but they're gone somewhere.
Okay.
And then they suddenly come back, and so you have to account for that in your recruiting targets as well. We have some LDS missionaries on the roster here, but nowhere near warranting a full other spreadsheet, right?
Yeah.
So, but Rachel does a really nice job of that, a better job than I ever did. But yeah, we're a developmental program, so we're not always looking to replace, like, okay, we lost 3 linebackers this year to graduation, et cetera. We need 3 recruits. We're not always looking at it exactly that way. We're looking for best available. We're looking in the state of Colorado first to try to build that overall regional cohesiveness. And then after that, we're going to go, you know, out of state and find best available. And if one position group starts to get really skewed and, you know, doesn't have any veteran leadership or something like that, okay, well, we need to address that at that moment. But we're not necessarily just going out and saying, Preston, as the D coordinator linebacker coach, you have 2.5 scholarships. Go do your thing. See you later. It's not like that. At the Power 5 level, it is like that.
Sure.
The position coach is 100% responsible for the identification, evaluation, and recruitment of their position.
Are guys always, like you said, they're signing paperwork and stuff and they're shaking a little bit. I mean, are they kind of speechless for the most part when they get that news from you, or is it just kind of vary? Some guys like, oh my gosh, wow, I'm not gonna, I'm gonna make this look like a great smart decision.
Totally variable. I mean, I just try to be open, and I'm actually emotional about it. I want these guys to know how I feel about them. And so there's times when it starts out and I'm really getting like this cold, icy, cool feeling like, you know, yeah, coach, I expected this and, you know, thank you. Like just trying to play it cool. But typically when I'm, you know, saying, hey, I'd really like to thank your parents for me because I know the sacrifices that they've made, you know, and hey, will you be calling them after this? And are you going to let them know? And because this, if we are, by the way, I should give you this dynamic. If we award a guy at the end of a semester a scholarship, it's retroactive. So basically all the money that that player and his parents might have spent on education for the last 4 months comes in a single check.
Wow.
So it's
wow.
possible for our guys to get a check. And at 19, 20, 21 years old, how many guys get a $10,000 check or more, you know, just all at once?
Yeah.
And
wow.
so, yeah, it I mean, just from a monetary standpoint, it's big. But then I also just, you know, I want to be an open book and put myself out there and tell them how much that they mean to us in this program. And so typically even the guys that are trying to play it cool start to kind of like let their guard down and just like, coach, this is a huge moment for me. It's really cool.
Yeah, and that this is becoming my favorite thing with this podcast is to hearing again. You touched on your relationship with David Afari. We've learned about some really unique players and maybe what they have going on personally or with their family or something. And the way you guys connect over all of that really is fascinating. And then to see it all kind of come full circle and be rewarded in such a way when you get to this point. Coach, kind of the final bullet point we want to go over is secondary detrimental behavior. So I'm like, secondary? Are we talking about secondary or what are we talking about here?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a good, interesting
See,
way to
my
read
brain,
it.
My brain goes all over the place, Coach.
Our secondary is on point. I had an eye opener. I got some criticism this last week. Some well deserved feedback and criticism. So I found out that we had a poker house and that there's a lot of poker going on, card night, you know, with the players. And the circumstances around how I found out, you know, there was you know. I got to figure out how to say it. It was alarming for a few different reasons. And the first is I've been to poker night. And I know that at poker night, you don't say, hey, guys, it's, you know, it's 10:30. It's time to wrap it up, right? Yeah. We got weights in the morning or we got practice tomorrow. And the second is nobody says, hey, man, get that beer out of here. You know,
yeah.
You don't bring whiskey to poker night.
Like,
yeah. So I know that, you know, it's not – there's not a bunch of self-help books out there that talk about, okay, if you really want to be successful in life – start going to poker night several nights a week, right? So it's like it's one of these things that there's nothing evil about poker. I have nothing against it. I like to play it too, but can it be a detriment? Well, anyway, I found out about this and I found out kind of like that a lot of the guys that were doing it are some of the guys that are struggling in school and they're struggling with their commitment and they're underperforming, right? Not all of them, some of them. And I don't have a complete list because I would never put a player in that position where I call somebody in and say, hey, I understand you're playing poker. Who's there? Who else is there, right? Mm-hmm. But it just kind of it came out kind of somewhat organically. So the correction I needed was I overreacted a little bit. I've been preaching to the guys, I've been talking to you about it, the party lifestyle, the marijuana, the alcohol, the painkillers, you know. These are things we've really been attacking. I'm bringing in guest speakers. I'm preaching it. I'm emphasizing it. We're testing for marijuana. I'm doing everything I can to kind of get this team to the point where, hey, let's realize that this is a small window in your life to do football. And when it's over, it's over. If I'm out there at my age playing poker, doing things that cost me my job, my motivation, my clarity of mind, you know, whatever. I can hit rock bottom. Maybe I can rebuild. Maybe I can't. Football's just done.
Yeah.
You're done with football when
sure.
it's done, and it's such a small window. And so these are the things I'm preaching. But I got in front of the team on the scrimmage morning and you know, was talking about some of those things and then just kind of went into a tirade on the poker thing, you know, like and it really wasn't about poker. It could have been Monopoly. You know, if they're staying up late,
yeah.
Too late, not getting sleep, and these things are last until 3 in the morning and there's drinking or whatever there. So I had to do some thought. I had one of the players come in, and it kind of occurs at his house sometimes. And he's like, hey, coach, you know, I'm bought in, man. I've changed my life because of the things that you're preaching. And we need some opportunity to hang out as players and have fellowship and camaraderie, you know. And this is not what you're thinking. This is not like every night. It's not It's not to the wee hours of the morning. There's not a bunch of booze there. And then he was really honest and said, there have been nights that got away from us. And there have been, we have done it at times too often. But I want to let you know that you got a team that's bought in. And we're not, this is not what you're thinking it is. And now we're like, shoot, man, we've given up all these vices. And now we can't play poker either. Mm. So I've got this, you know, kind of next speech in mind of, you know, when I get with the players of, you know, our primary targets in terms of threats to your opportunity to play this game at the highest level you can is certainly the marijuana, the alcohol, the painkillers. You know, a second level would be poker, a secondary level threat, but also snowboarding, pick up basketball, you know. And it could be, theoretically, it could be Monopoly or Chutes and Ladders. Like,
he's got a guy obsessed with Monopoly.
I've never known that culture. I've known the poker culture to be a late night culture, right? Yeah. Guys go on benders. They throw their lives away. It's an addiction, right? Mm-hmm. And so I need to preach about that, but also keep it, keep it in perspective about, you know, the threat level and the danger level, and really teach these guys more about, okay, the value of sleep and right sleep, the value of managing your money appropriately, being responsible with your money, your time, and achieving in life, and not try to dictate everything that they do. If I'm taking away pickup basketball or snowboarding, I theoretically I could do that. There is a threat. There is a danger. They can get hurt. But what about pickleball? What about volleyball with the girls, you know, on date night? You know, sure. I mean, some of these things are wholesome and good, and I think there's an appropriate level of kind of intensity that you can bring to any activity, and that's what I need to be preaching.
I'm telling you that I really appreciate you going there with us on that, because it's true with anything you do. I mean, you could, whether it's poker night, you get together with the fellas or whatever, and you're doing video game night or something, but if it turns into 2 a.m. and there's other things there, whatever, that could lead you down this different path. Everything can lead you to something. I mean, wherever that might go, positively, negatively, you look at what's going on in the professional sports right now too, with guys gambling, and you think, why would they do that? They're making pretty good money just to not do that. Just don't do it. But it still happens. Guys are doing it and they're getting in trouble for it. So I totally get where you're going with, you know, just be careful with what you're doing with these secondary detrimental behaviors too. They can be innocent. They can be fun. It can be about building camaraderie. But it's a slippery slope too. If suddenly 9 o'clock hits and it's like, do you guys want to grab a couple of beers? Now it's midnight. Now it's 2, whatever. And you're losing money and you're groggy. You're not focused on the next day.
Yeah, absolutely. There are just so many behaviors that can go. And I've seen it. Over the years, I've seen guys throw it away for video games. I've seen guys throw it away for pickup basketball. I've seen guys get injured on the ski slopes. And so, you know, I just want to go full attack mode anytime I hear about it. And it was great to have a player that's bought in, that I trust as a player, who's handling their business in the classroom as well. It just kind of check me on that and say, hey, coach, we're bought in, man. The marijuana thing, the alcohol thing. You got a sober team here. We're giving it our all.
So did you at that point say, all right, if you guys can maintain that, then feel, you know, do your thing? Or can you give us that? You don't have to tell us the details of what happened.
No, no, I did. You know, I think there was about 20 seconds of silence, because when I called the player in, I was like, I just bumped him into the hallway and said, hey, let me talk to you for a minute. I just want to let you know I'm losing sleep at night. I'm not sure whether you're best for this team or not. You know, like, I'm not sure whether there's a better place for you. What do you mean, coach? Mm-hmm. You know, and then it just, like, we're like, my leadership philosophy is, if I'm thinking it, the player deserves to know it. And so I wanted to get this out there to the player, and I didn't call him in to have him be on trial or explain to me anything. And he even started to explain. I said, hey, man, you're not on trial. I just want to let you know, like, I don't think you live the lifestyle that I'm preaching. And so is this painful for you to hear from me every day and to have me kind of hammering this thing home, and you're doing a different thing? And he's like, you know, coach, you got me wrong. Mm. But he was honest enough with, you know, with the overall lifestyle, and then told me about his past and his history a little bit. And he just convinced me that I, you know, was coming down too strong, not just on him, but on the whole team in certain ways. Like, I need to make sure and recognize. I say it to him all the time. Hey, fellas, I'm not perfect. I don't expect you to be perfect, but I think I think I need to say that more often and talk about the consequences of all actions and just put it in a better perspective. Just do a better job of teaching.
Wow. And I think that's strength right there. I mean, being able to kind of take a step back and go, okay, let me reevaluate how I approached it. Because I think we said this weeks ago. I mean, I look up to coaches. You know, like I said, the idea to sit here with you and do a podcast like this is phenomenal for me. It's an honor. But you guys are still human. You are human. So it's you guys can have a little bit of a crack once in a while in how you might approach something. Because I always just view coaches as you guys know your stuff. That's your philosophy. You're sticking to it. There's a reason you're here and you're at this level. But there can be a slight crack once in a while where you have to step back and go, maybe I looked at that one differently and I'm going to give it a different approach. I think that's some great self-reflection right there.
Especially when we're, you know, I'm so often talking to a whole team. And I said it a minute ago. One of the reasons I was upset is there are players that are really struggling that are part of this poker night.
Yeah.
And I know that's part of it, right? But to just kind of like throw that on the whole team in that moment was, just not, it was oafish on my part. I need to do a better job.
Wow. I appreciate you going there. And again, you know, we're talking culture. You're talking changing a culture, and that is not easy. That's not easy for anybody.
Yeah.
And you're all kind of trying to help each other, maybe not meet in the middle, but meet somewhere. And it sounds like you, at least with one player, had that meeting where you kind of come to it somewhat of an understanding of how things are being handled or approached or whatever. So I love that.
Totally.
Coach, what's next as we wrap up? Let our listeners know this podcast. You know, obviously we'll be back at it next week for our podcast, but what do the next couple of months look like for UNC football?
You should see some signs of our assistant coaches being out and hitting every school in the state. It's our goal to walk in the door of the top three highest classifications of high school football and shake hands with the coach and ask him who are the guys we should be looking at and be a visible presence on all of those campuses. We go to other schools as well, but some of them we don't have the time or resources to get to the more rural schools. But we do contact those schools. We call them. I think there's a level of appreciation and excitement from the Colorado high school coaches for that. We are by far and away offering the most opportunities to Colorado high school kids, certainly at the Division I level. So I think you should start to see some signs of that, players that are getting looks and opportunities. We're not really in the early offer game, so we don't offer a lot of kids this time of year, but we're out there and talking to them and identifying. And so that'll be an exciting thing that's going on for about the next 2 weeks where we get out there. And then we want to get in and really grind on all that spring video from a different lens instead of the daily corrections. We want to look back and say, okay, overall, let's sort all of these snaps by coverage or front or run concept or, you know, whatever the case is. And let's really get in, where can we teach better? Which of our players are we maybe underestimating? Which of them are we overestimating and need to make some corrections on? And there's just a different, like I was alluding to earlier, there's a different lens, a different perspective. Once the daily grind of that spring practice session is over, I think we can see some of that video with a little more clarity.
When's the next that date when everybody's back together?
Yeah, so that's late May. Probably have them all over my place for a barbecue, maybe put a pig in the ground or something for this. And then we start on May 28th, and that'll be our 316. We're back into the Misogis. We're back into the, okay, you've got to have certain level of fitness and conditioning to kind of move forward towards a fall camp. And so, you know, all the guys are going to be a little more prepared for that, the veteran guys. And I think a little more motivated through this next month or so of discretionary training, on their own training is another way to say it, that they have for the next month.
It flies by. I mean, here it is. It is May today, actually, as we do this.
That's
We're already in the month of May. So it flies by, Coach. Another wonderful episode, very enlightening stuff from you. And I got a little snippet of depth chart kind of thing for me. So I feel good without
your box.
Having to go into too much detail. Always appreciate you, Coach. And you know, we'll look forward to catching up with you next week, as we're in the teens now on this bad boy.
That's amazing. That's thing. Amazing to me. Yeah. And I have heard signs. There are some people out there listening. So it's worth doing it if nobody's listening, but it sure makes me feel good that somebody's out there and kind of enjoying it.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of great things from it. And, you know, we really thank those that are reaching out and you know, talking about it and things like that. It's so much fun. I think our boy Blake Olson said, I don't care if you're a Bears fan or not. It's just a good football podcast. And we have you to, because you opened that door for us a little bit that I can only pretend to know about. You actually let us in and say, Brady, actually, this is kind of how things go. And it's been very enlightening. So we appreciate you for that.
Thank you for all your efforts.
All right, Coach. We'll see you next week. This is another edition, episode 13 of Football 52, 14 coming up next week.